VI Shots Podcast, episode number 33. Well, hello, everyone. My name is Michael Ivaliotis, and this is VI Shots, the podcast devoted to the world of LabVIEW. With each episode, I bring you interviews, discussions, and share with you ideas for how you can take your LabVIEW development to the next level. Well, thank you again, everyone, for joining me on this episode of VI Shots. Today, I have with me, of course, as always, a special guest. And this time, her name is Nancy Hollenbeck. Nancy, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Michael.
Nancy is an NI field architect with National Instruments. And Nancy, you've been on the show before, and you've walked us through exactly what a field architect is. But today, we're not going to be talking about that. You were at NI Week 2013, so how was that?
It was fantastic as usual. A lot of really good technical sessions.
Yeah, and you actually gave a few presentations, and one of them you did was related to functional global variables, which for anyone who's an expert in LabVIEW, they kind of know functional global variables like the back of their hand, so to speak. But you actually introduced a few tips and tricks that maybe even some of the advanced people might not be aware of. And it was a pretty interesting presentation. So we're going to walk through some of that today. What was your feedback from when you actually gave the presentation at NI Week?
I got a lot of really, really good feedback. And I had given it the year before. And I generally have people asking for the demos, asking for the slides. And so it tends to be fairly well received. And it's interesting because functional global variables can be a little bit of a lightning rod. There are those people in one extreme that love them and overuse them, which causes a little bit of consternation for the rest of the world. And then there's the other side of the perspective where people have decided that functional global variables, quote, should fall off like training wheels, unquote, and everyone should use DVRs instead. So I really wanted to do a survey from beginning to end, highlighting the benefits and highlighting as well some alternatives.
Now, before we get into that, I know you've been traveling quite a bit across the U.S. Past several months, and also in Europe, I guess you have been, from what I've seen.
Yes.
First of all, you help organize, I believe, the CLD summits. Is that true?
That's correct. We have had some fantastic CLD summits. We did our first one in Denver last year. This year, we held them in Denver, Salt Lake, and Phoenix.
Now, what is a CLD summit exactly?
Well, the idea of the CLD summit was to actually try to create something that was a subset of the CLA summit. So one of our goals was to bring some of the content and ideas from the CLA summit potentially to the regional areas. The other intent was really to have that same kind of CLA summit type forum. And so we invite CLDs and CLAs. For instance, in Phoenix, there were no presentations by NI, purely presentations from the community. So it's like the CLA summit. It was one day for people in a given community to really dive deep into various topics that interested them.
That's cool. So it's a mixture of CLDs and CLAs in there as well.
Yes. And so part of the goal is for the CLAs to exert a little bit of leadership and lead some of the CLDs. And so some of the sessions might be more CLD plus focused, but then some of the sessions were a little bit more advanced. But it definitely inspired everyone to come back next year. And a few of those CLDs are now inspired to get their CLA cert so they can come to the summit in Austin.
So then it's not, like a once a year thing that it is with the CLA summit. It was kind of scattered throughout the year, I think, right?
It's the way we did it is it's going to be a once a year event.
Oh, okay.
And it will probably be held in the fall, and which is what we've done the last few years. And so it's kind of like, it's scheduled a little bit like our developer days, so that in the fall we will hit three or four cities again. And I really handled western part of the U.S. with the exception of California. So I know we'll do Denver, Phoenix, Salt Lake, and probably add a few more cities next year. And then there are some individuals that are working on a CLD summit, I think, in probably the D.C. and Boston areas for Q1 or Q2 next year.
And so that's motivation for people to get their CLD certification, I guess, right?
Is because it was fantastic. It's just like the CLA summit. It's just one day, but really good technical insight, really good conversation, and some good laughter as well.
Well, that's great. Definitely, I'll put links on vishots.com for information on how people can not only get to the CLD summit, but also get certified to become a CLD in the first place. So that's make sure people get certified for that. So let's get started into some of the information that you have for us on functional global variables. Let's start a little bit from the basics. You know, what is, when we say functional global variable, what do we talk about here?
Well, the term functional global variable is a term that NI finally coined to explain a design pattern in which data is stored on the uninitialized shift register of a while loop or a for loop. And this is a technique that evolved over time, and it's not a feature that you can pull out of LabVIEW and drop down in your block diagram, unless of course you've created a template, which would be part of the goal. So it emerged back from the LabVIEW 2 days when we did not have global variables in LabVIEW natively, but the uninitialized shift register provided that data storage mechanism, because if someone ran a VI that had a while loop with a shift register that's not initialized, whatever's stored on the right-hand side is available later from the left-hand side. And so it had several names. I think some of the first ones were LabVIEW 2 style globals, and then it was called USRs and VIGs, and it had many names. And probably about 10 years ago, NI finally coined the term functional global variable, because it is a design pattern that you have to build, and it functions as global data storage within an application instance of LabVIEW. And so one of the things that I wanted to remind people is, when we're looking at our application and thinking about all the different ways that we can share data across processes, we need to consider first, do I need a messaging mechanism where I send a message and it's acted upon? Or do I just need a simple spot to store data so that any other piece of my code can access it later? So it is data storage. It is global. So you can share between two VIs in an application instance.
Yeah. So the basic form is a lot of old people like us. We know of it as a while loop that iterates only once, and it has a shift register on it. And that's kind of the basics of it. And the shift register on the left side is left uninitialized. And I guess the idea being that whatever's on the shift register is your memory that you want to keep between iterations. I mean, sort of between calls to this functional global variable.
Correct.
And so it's actually a VI, right, that you put down in the diagram. At its basic form, it has... I guess you can write data to it, so you have an input and you can populate the shift register, and then you can have a read mode where you can read data from the right-hand side of the shift register. So there's a get and a set. Now, a lot of people have started experimenting with, instead of using a while loop, they use a for loop with one iteration on it, or they get rid of the loop and use like a feedback node as well. I've seen people do that. I guess it doesn't matter, right? As long as you're using a shift register.
Yeah, I don't think it matters at all. I think the key thing is that it, like you said, it's encapsulated as a sub VI. And so if I'm going to create a functional global variable, I can use a feedback node if I would prefer to grab that extra 1% or 2% performance. I'm not sure what that number actually is. Yeah. But the key thing is that I need to make sure that I'm documenting this VI so that when someone uses it, they understand that it is a functional global variable. And I might want to put FGV on the top of the banner. I might want to include maybe something that represents that it's holding global data. And then, as you mentioned, there's always a set or get. And usually it's a myriad of actions, like initialize, or in the case I'm using a counter, so we have increment or decrement or reset. And then so that becomes an enumeration that is an enum. And so the point being that it will be clear to the user that's looking at the block diagram that when they look at this, they'll recognize, oh, this is a functional global variable. One of the thoughts I had was, when I open it up, I've always stuck to while loops just because you know, I'm kind of been around, I'm old too, and everyone's always been using while loops. And so that's easily recognizable. So that's what I tend to use. If I'm really concerned about performance, then I'm probably going to change the internals of this and make it a global behind the scenes. And maybe we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. Well, I think that's an interesting tip there. One thing that I can tell by looking at the VI is if it has an enum constant wired up to it and with various options. And that's kind of a giveaway that it's a functional, like from the outside, I guess. And like you said, if you can name it, put FGV in the title of the VI or on the icon somehow, that helps a lot.
Yeah, I think it's really important from a readability standpoint. That's a key thing we need to be thinking about in our code.
Yeah. So if you see a while loop with a shift register and some stuff happening inside of it, you know that it's a functional global variable, especially if it iterates once. And this is a concept that confuses new people to LabVIEW, because we're so used to having a loop that iterates multiple times, and it takes them a while to grasp what's going on here. And once you explain the concept, it is something that basically you're using the structures and components of LabVIEW to do something, to create something else, right?
Right.
And it's basically a pattern, a design pattern.
Mm-hmm. But I think it's a good design pattern, even if someone chooses to move beyond functional global variables and not use them later. Someone who's newer to LabVIEW, like you said, it's a challenge to see exactly what's going on. But once they grasp what a functional global variable is doing behind the scenes, I think they really learn some important aspects about LabVIEW. And I'll go off on a slight tangent. And I asked a question at a user group one time in Denver, and I asked everyone, what was that one thing that tripped you up when you were programming, and if you had caught it earlier, you wouldn't have wasted so much time? And a lot of people mentioned that they had uninitialized shift registers somewhere in their code. So I think it's an important concept that we learn through the process of learning functional global variables.
Interesting, yeah. And, you know, a lot of people will say, well, let's get to the question, I guess, is related to, functional global variables. Doesn't LabVIEW have global variables? Like, why can't we use those? And why do we have to go to these functional global variables, which is this extra step? And is LabVIEW broken? Are we trying to fix something here? So let's tackle the topic of, you know, why not use global variables, the ones that are built into LabVIEW?
Well, I'll take one step back. And one thing that is important is for someone who's newer to LabVIEW, since functional global variables are around and will reside in a lot of legacy code, even if I choose an alternative going forward, it's important for me to understand what it is. Mm-hmm. Now to the question at hand of a global variable versus a functional global variable. The reality is I could use a global variable with one of the tips that we talk about later. The problem with just a pure global variable is that it is a dumb data repository. And it's just sitting there, and any place in my code could write to it. Any place in my code, I can read from it. There is nothing in that global variable that is letting the user know that there is valid data available that that might order the operations. And so the nice thing about a functional global variable is it allows me to add extra code, extra wrapper code around my global data storage to ensure that it does have valid data. There may be certain operations that need to occur first, and it can control that as well. So it's that extra piece of code. I can include whatever error handling or rather error reporting that I might need to include as well.
That's important. It's the function part of the functional global variable.
Right.
That's the functionality. One thing that I think is also important is memory usage. Right? Because I think every time we place a regular global on the diagram, we're creating a duplicate of the data in memory, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So especially when for small values or scalar values, perhaps might not be a huge memory impact. But I think in general, when you use globals all over the place and you have large data sets, then you definitely have a memory penalty. Whereas the shift register is just one memory location that gets reused in the functional global variable. So that's important as well, I think.
Right, that is. And the other thing to mention is the encapsulation piece. since the global variable is floating around in the block diagram, I have no protection to ensure when someone is actually accessing the data. And so at least with a functional global variable, the data is residing inside the functional global variable, and my wrapper is controlling what pieces of the data can be accessed. So there's that extra little encapsulation piece.
Yeah, and I think this is a good time to mention that a lot of people talk about that, well, you know, functional global variables eliminate race conditions, but that's not always true.
No, absolutely not. And this is an important piece of terminology, because we have functional global variables is a broad category. And one mistake that we can make is we can replace our global variable with just a functional global variable that will set a value or get a value. And I haven't really solved the race condition problem then, because I could have two pieces of my code getting the value, changing it, and then they stomp on each other when they're trying to reset the value. And so the term action engine refers to a functional global variable that is doing more than set and get. It's actually performing a specific action. So if I were creating a timer, then I wouldn't want to create a functional global variable in which I get the time and my functional global variable is just the get and set. And then in my code, I'm manipulating. What I want to do is I want all of my actions to be inside the functional global variable, inside specific case structures. And so my functional global variable, I will get the value, get the current time or whatever it is that's part of my timer. And then there'll be a case structure for getting time, starting the timer, stopping the timer, whatever action needs to occur. And then the data, of course, is set into the uninitialized shift register. And so the idea is that there's this critical section of code, and the critical section of code includes the getting of the value, the modifying of the value internal to the functional global variable, and then the setting of the value. And all of that gets wrapped up into the functional global variable VI.
Yeah, and the protection part of it comes from the VI itself.
Yes.
The VI is like a nice little wrapper where all the action happens inside the VI. And if you're calling this VI, this functional global variable from multiple locations, you know, LabVIEW, when it goes inside the sub-VI and executes the code in two different calls, one call has to wait for the other.
Correct.
Provided that the VI is set to non-reentrant, which is the default configuration, right?
Yes.
And that's another critical point, is to understand that it has to be a non-reentrant VI.
Yes. And that's one of the other benefits of understanding functional global variables, is learning about reentrancy and non-reentrancy and what are the various use cases. And so I remember when I took my first Basics 1, Basics 2 course years ago, and I had difficulty getting my head around, what does reentrancy actually mean? And this was back in the days when we did not do a lot of asynchronous applications, and all of our LabVIEW applications were very, very simple. But I think this is a good use case that illustrates the fact that when it's non-reentrant, then those two VIs share the data space. And so they're both pointing to that same uninitialized shift register, but LabVIEW will have to complete one before it completes the other. And that's the protection that we get to ensure that we don't have race conditions.
Right. So both VIs can't execute in parallel, so to speak. They have to, one has to execute first and then the other. Because if you make them a reentrant, then basically it's just like having a copy of this. What I think of it as having the same VI, but just doing a save as on it and calling it dash copy.
That's a great analogy. I like that analogy. Yeah.
Yeah, you just basically the code looks exactly identical, but it's just two different VIs, and they can operate independently, and they're operating basically on two different data. So they're not even related. So. And sometimes you might want that functionality, but in most cases in the functional global variable, you don't want that.
Correct. You know, the scenario where I have an analysis function and I'm going to perform that piece of analysis on five different arrays in parallel, that's when I want that reentrancy, because they each have their own data space, because they're each operating on a unique array. Whereas anytime I need to share data space, share that uninitialized shift register data space, then I want to be non-reentrant. And that's an important thing to think about as well, is if I have a functional global variable that takes a lot of time to execute, then it actually is a blocking call, because that VI is going to complete execution before the next functional global variable completes execution. And so that might be something I want to consider in my design, and I might want to ensure that my functional global variables are extremely slim and execute very quickly. Otherwise, I could end up having performance hits by serializing all of these slow functions.
So now I wanted to get into one topic that you mentioned in your presentation, which I found kind of interesting, and I might try it out to see how it works in my applications, is where we actually use regular globals and we put them inside a functional global variable. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, and I have to give credit to Stephen Mercer, first mentioned this, I think, on LavaG several years ago, and I really liked the idea. Because what we want from our global data storage VIs, whatever their internals look like, is we want to encapsulate the data so we're controlling who has access to it. And we want to be able to add this extra functionality to the code so that we can know when there's valid data that's stored in the functional global variable. So the idea was to use our project libraries, and then inside the project library, we would add a global. And a global is nothing more than a special kind of VI that doesn't have a block diagram. So we would create our global variable, we would put it in our project library, and then we would make it protected. So when I right-click on the global variable inside my project library, and I select Access Scope and select Protected, what that means is no one can use that global variable anywhere else in their code. So now I've protected myself against the use case in which my teammate willy-nilly is setting and getting values inside that global. They can't use the global variable. And so then what I add is I add some VIs inside my project library that will actually access the global variable, and at the end of the day, it effectively looks just like a functional global variable. And so what I'll end up doing is there'll be, I might have a VI, and the VI that's inside the project library, in the case of a counter, it might have the increment, decrement, and it wraps the global variable. So in essence, it would be nothing more than really a case structure in which the global variable, which is private again, comes into the case structure, then I perform my action, and then I put the value back into the case structure as well, back into the global variable, as well as I return it to the user. And I use the same enum for my case structure like I would have used for a functional global variable. So then the result is, for my teammates who use the code, it looks just like a functional global variable from their perspective. And so they know how to use it, and it's something they can just drop in and start using in their code. The benefit is that I am now having the performance improvement of a global variable as opposed to something a little bit slower, because the functional global variable has all this extra code overhead. When I did some initial tests, just some real simple comparisons, I was getting about not quite a 10x improvement in performance by using this methodology. And I also like I like it conceptually because it's cleaner. I'm not using a while loop for the purpose of using shift registers that could potentially confuse someone. I'm actually just using a global variable and wrapping it in a way that I have something that is more robust than the global standing alone. So it looks like a functional global variable, but I get the improved performance is a key thing that I could get out of it. And of course, for someone else in their use case, they would need to run their own benchmarks for whatever it is that they're working on.
Yeah, I'm not sure if this method, how it performs memory-wise, because you still have two calls to the global inside the VI, so I'm not sure memory-wise if how that would work. You might have a duplicate of memory once at least you know, because you're reading and writing. But I don't know. We'll have to experiment with that.
Exactly. But I think in this case, there's the global variables. There's a read and there's a write, and they're only located in one specific spot.
Right.
In that VI, as opposed to scattered all over the block diagram. So that would be a good question for someone to experiment with.
Yeah, so just to recap, because It's always hard describing code without seeing it on the air. So this is a challenge in this podcast, as always. But just to remind people that when we say project libraries, we're talking about LVLibs, right? And they were introduced in version 8 something of LabVIEW, but for us old people. But for most people that have just started LabVIEW, LVLibs are a certain type of library that exists inside of a LabVIEW project. Access scope is basically what we're talking about when you can protect individual elements so that they can only be accessed from VIs that are inside of the LVLib, right? So that's what you're talking about, of the functional global variable VI exists inside this LVLib, and that's the only one that can really access the global. So nobody else can touch it. So you're preventing basically this willy-nilly scatter shot, you know, approach of having this global located all over your program without control over it. And basically you're the only one that can access it. This, the functional global variable is the only one that has access to that global because it's from the protected scope aspect of it.
Yeah, I think protected access scope is definitely an underutilized feature in LabVIEW, because if anyone drags my global variable that has been set to protected, and you see that tiny, tiny little red key on it when you make that setting, if they drag that into their VI and their VI is not part of the project library, then it will break their code. Mm-hmm. And the error that is reported is very clear.
Yeah, that's how a lot of things are in LabVIEW, right? Right? They evolve as the community sort of gets a hold of them and comes up with these new ideas. And that's kind of what I like about the community and talking to different people, is I get to learn all these cool ideas and bounce them off other people, and they evolve into something new, right?
Yes, exactly. We're all part of this community creating process. That's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and again, going back to kind of the CLD summits and CLA summits, again, that's what they cultivate as well, is this exchange of information.
Right, exactly.
There's a design pattern that uses functional globals, which is this resource storage concept, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what this is again, using functional globals, and there's shift registers, but there's actually two shift registers and they interact somehow. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's basically using a functional global variable as a lookup table. And so there'll be two things that are stored on the uninitialized shift register. The first thing would be the name. So think about a name value or a key value pair. So for every name, and in this example, I used passwords. And so I might have five names, Bob, Susan, and Shelley. And then I might have three names and three passwords associated with each. And so then I can set a value with a name. So I might set John's password, or I might get John's password, or I might add Mary's password, or I might delete John's password. And so one of the nice things about using a design pattern for a lookup table is, in general, we're going to use the lookup table in the same way over and over again. We might be using lookup tables for names of devices that are part of our system. It might be configuration information, password information. We could also use lookup tables for storing references for things for APIs such as user events that did not have the names for user events or for DVRs. So there's a lot of things we could use a lookup table for. The nice thing is, and this is actually an example that we did pull from the Advanced Architectures course, is we created a template. And the template is set up for a lot of the basic functionality. And so there is the name. And then if the name is in the list that's already existing, then you can get the value. And the value could be a number. It can be a Boolean. It can be a cluster. It's defined up front as being a type def cluster. And so in this template, we've included a lot of the error handling so that if you try to look up a name that doesn't exist, it will report an error. Or if you're trying to set a name that already does exist, it reports an error. So it's really easy to start with just a template, make some quick modifications, and we save ourselves a lot of time.
Yeah, and we'll actually be posting links to your presentation and the examples on vishots.com just to for people who want to go back to the website and look at this. But just to kind of recap on what you said, the lookup table in LabVIEW, in this case, would be an array. So we have an array of data that we want to find something in the array. And this array could be just an array of Booleans, or it could be an array of complicated cluster data types. And then the thing that you use to look up is most likely a string. I guess it's always a string.
In most cases that I've run, it's been a string.
Yeah. So you have an array of strings, which are the names of the items. And then you do a lookup on the names. You use the search function in LabVIEW, like search array.
Right, exactly. In this case, we're using the search function. And I think I show another tip later of using variant attributes for improving the searching for the internals of a functional global variable if the array is going to be really, really large. But yes, just the basic search string for a simple lookup table.
Yeah, variant attributes is another one of those tips that you discover later on and realize that's interesting. Yeah. I didn't realize that existed. So talk a little bit about that, about the variant attribute approach.
So in the variant attribute, and I learned this a ways ago, there are, so I have a variant. So the variant is in LabVIEW. But then a variant can also have attributes which are themselves also variants. And so what I can do is in that purple variant wire, I can store all kinds of information that is different types. And so that's one interesting thing. But if I apply it to functional global variables, what I can then do is when I'm using set variant attribute or get variant attribute, it uses names. And so it actually functions as a lookup table itself. And the searching algorithm, and I can't remember what kind of special searching algorithm it is, but Darren Nattinger talks about it in Darren's Nuggets on the NI discussion forums. And so there's some more details there. But the idea then is instead of storing everything on the uninitialized shift register, these values are actually stored as variant attributes, and variant attributes are named. So then if I want to get a value, and then I just use the get variant attribute. I give it the name. So the name is kind of the key, just like in the functional global variable version. So the name might be, again, John or Mary or Susie. And then the value that comes out would be their associated password. So it effectively stores an array of things with its corresponding array of names. The performance can be significant if there are very, very large arrays of information that are being stored. And again, it's one of those things that someone would need to actually test. And so what it would look like then is the set variant attribute and the get variant attribute, those VIs would reside inside the case structure. And then outside the case structure, we would still be using the shift registers for the purpose of passing the actual variant wire through each iteration. But the values are actually set and get internal to the case structure where we use the set variant attribute or get variant attribute function.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely another approach that you know, for someone who wants to go to the next level and optimize their code, definitely need to look at that.
Right. And if someone wants to be super optimized, and I haven't actually tested this, but I've been privy to conversations, pulling large chunks of data out of using the get attribute and get variant attribute, and if it's a large data set, it might not be quite as efficient. So the ideal perfect solution would be to use the variant attribute to pull out an index number and then actually pull it out of an array. So if someone were trying to the highest performance, that would be probably where they'd want to head.
Oh, that's cool. It makes me want to go off and write a template VI that has all this inside of it.
And that's our goal, because the more template VIs we have, the more reusable our code is, and it helps us preserve quality of code.
I want to get off this conversation, so I go create reuse VIs.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm excited. Okay, so the next approach for optimization, I guess, is, well, actually, this approach helps us on many levels, because one of the limitations of the functional global variable is you just have one instance of it, right? You have this one VI, and there's one data storage. But if you need something similar or to create a duplicate of it, then you have to create basically another VI exactly identical to it. One approach that makes that allows us to get, I guess, the benefits of having reusable code and be able to create duplicates of these functional global variables is a DVR, data value reference. And can you talk about this approach a little bit?
Yes. And I think for those who are really advanced in our audience, we could creatively turn a functional global variable into multiple instances, so it's not just a singleton, by dynamically launching clones. And so there's some creative things that could be done. But those are a little bit more complicated, I think, for most of our users. And I really like the clarity of using the data value reference. And so this was introduced, I think, in 2010. And the idea is sometimes I need to pass data in my API with a reference as opposed to passing the data itself. And so we were given this opportunity using this data value reference, and there are two VIs that are on the memory control palette, which is a subpalette of application control. And it's two simple VIs that are create data value reference and destroy data value reference. And so the idea is I can pass any piece of data, be that a constant, a numeric, a class, and I pass it into the create, and then the output terminal is, in essence, a reference wrapper around that data. Or think about it as being a pointer. So now I have a reference, and I have a pointer, so that when I fork that wire, I'm not making a copy of the data. I'm making a copy of the reference itself. So for our audience, the picture that you want to be thinking about is, think about the producer-consumer design pattern. And when we use queues, you have a reference coming into the producer-consumer design pattern. And in essence, whatever I enqueue on the producer side, I can dequeue on the consumer side. However, I'm actually inserting in something and I'm causing it to come out on the other end. But the idea is those two loops are effectively, because of that reference, pointing to the same queue space. So in this case, this isn't queues. This is just a single piece of data, when I have one of them, that two loops in parallel can access that data, because they each have a pointer or a reference to that data. And then to actually set and get values, then we use the in-place element structure, which once I place it down in my block diagram, then I right-click and select DVR reference. And so that will, in essence, unwrap the reference and give me the data itself, so that I can manipulate it or extract it or set it. And then I pass it back out of the right-hand side of the in-place element structure, in which case it is now a reference of the value again.
So the benefit here is that, it's functionality. I mean, implementation on the diagram-wise, it's a different concept than functional global variables, because functional global variables, you have this one VI, and inside of it there's case structures which are controlled by an enum that you feed in. Whereas the DVR approach, you're still protecting the data actions because you have a VI, but now you have one VI per action, right? And then you're passing the DVR reference between the VIs themselves. So that's a different approach, where you'll have like several VIs that do different functionalities. They operate, or they take an input, the reference, which the DVR reference, data value reference, and you pass that around, and then the action happens in these individual VIs. But there's more of them. There's more VIs. There's not just one VI in this case.
Right, and that gives me the ability, instead of having one VI with one icon that could potentially be doing 15 different actions on the data, then I can start to create a library. And a library where I have some functionality that makes sense, so that my customers can have a function for increment, a function for decrement, a function for get count, whatever it might be. So I'm effectively creating a library that someone could then turn around and use. And the other benefit here is when I have the create, if I need to create 10 counters or 10 timers, it is very, very simple because I would create a timer and then I now have a reference to that timer. So I might have 10 references to 10 different timers in my code and they're all operating autonomously. And so scaling to multiple instances of a thing and that thing being something that is kind of stored globally, DVRs really make that easy to do.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest benefit of this approach, because I'm going to add something to your presentation. Maybe you can add it for next year's or want to present it somewhere else, which I guess is a contribution to this.
Excellent. I love it.
So you can actually create similar functionality where you have a VI for every function and still have a functional global variable in the traditional sense. Because you can actually take the functional global variable with the enum, let's say the enum is in set to the initialize mode, mm-hmm. right? And then you can just put this inside of another VI and correct. Then just call this VI initialize.
Exactly.
Right? And then you can have also one that says increment counter and then just have the functional global variable inside the VI with the enum set to increment.
Yes.
So you can actually create a library of functionality with a traditional functional global variable, but not using DVR. So if you just wanted the library, like the collection of VIs approach, so to speak, you can actually still do that if you wanted to, right?
Right. You could definitely do that. And I think we mentioned that in a slide somewhere in the advanced course, if it's still in there. And it's an interesting concept because then I have these independent VIs and they're a library, but the thing that is passed between them is just the error cluster.
Is nothing, yeah. which could be disconcerting a little bit.
It is, because I need to pass a wire between my VIs, whether it's a by value wire or whether it's a reference wire. I need that wire connecting them. So I think it definitely would work. I'd have to train my team and let them know this is how we're doing this. So if it feels disconcerting, this is why.
Yeah. The benefit of that approach is that you get the benefit of the find all instances in LabVIEW.
Exactly. Right. Because now you don't have to pass the reference and you don't have to pass the data. Very good point.
Yeah, because for just using the regular functional global variable on the diagram with an enum, if you do a find all, like I want to find out, for example, where I'm initializing my global, right? Mm-hmm. If you have an initialize enum value, what you have to do is search for the word initialize, which could be all over the place, or you can do final instances on that functional global variable. Then you're going to find, 50 instances where they're doing all sorts of things, not necessarily just initialize. So you have a lot more overhead to find things of where the specific functionality actually happens in your code.
Oh, that's a very good point. I like that.
Yeah. So if you say, find where all the increments happen, then, and if you have them wrapped, you just find the increment VI and then you know exactly where you're going.
Excellent.
So that's one benefit.
Part of the presentation.
Yeah, I think that's kind of making them more like better a little bit. But I like the DVR approach mainly because you get the benefit of having, the shift register reusable memory location, but it's a reference and you get kind of best of both worlds. And you get the ability to create multiple of these things, which is also useful. It helps for reusability.
Yeah, it definitely helps reusability. And then in those scenarios, as we talked about earlier, if my data set is a really large data set, a really large cluster, maybe I have my cluster source, then I have a lot of control over when memory is actually being allocated, when I'm actually creating that item in memory.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in control also when I release it or destroy it. So it can help with performance from the perspective of memory.
Just another tip on DVRs, actually, we're kind of going on a tangent here, but I learned this when I was teaching one of the courses, actually. DVRs can be used kind of in a single shot mode where you can actually create a DVR, write some data to it, and then on the receiving end, wherever you want to receive it, you can just destroy it. And what that gives you, because the destroy function actually returns the data.
Right.
So if you want to pass data from one place to another just one time, you can just create it in one place, pass it to somewhere else, and then destroy it without actually, having a lot of these read writes and all this stuff. And then where you're destroying it is where you actually get the data. So anyway, just was an interesting design pattern, I think.
Yeah, because in that case, you're not doing any modifying. You're not using an in-place element structure. You create it. That reference shows up someplace else, is destroyed and read and destroyed at the same time. I like it.
Yeah, it's kind of a single shot approach. Yeah. Okay, well, I think that was a lot of, almost most of what you mentioned in your presentation, which was really awesome. Is there anything else that you, did we miss anything?
No, I don't think we missed anything. I think we have everything covered. The one little tidbit that I like to throw out there when I have more time, and sometimes this has been given in a longer session as opposed to the 60-minute format we have at NI Week, is when people are investigating data value references, they pair very well with classes. And so I will let people go investigate that on their own. But it's important to know that I can take my object and also wrap it in a DVR as well. So I'll just leave that tidbit for someone to go explore.
It seems like we're trying to convince people to try different approaches rather than functional global variables, but that's not the case. We just want people to try all different kinds of things and find the exact thing that works best for them, right?
Exactly. The functional global variable is a very important tool in our tool belt, but it's not the only tool. And I think that would be the key takeaway from this session.
Exactly. And also get out there on the community, discuss these different topics, bounce ideas off other people wherever you can, on the forums or even in the CLD or CLA summits. So go get certified and go get to those summits, I guess.
Absolutely. And user groups are another great place for developers to meet and learn new things.
Right. There's also NI Days, which is happening right now all over the US. And if you have one that's relatively close to you, you should try to go to those, because that's where some of the NI Week content is presented. So that's another good thing to do.
Yes, and the final plug is Developer Days in the springtime. I think we hit about 20 U.S. cities, and Developer Days is one day, and it's exclusively learning about LabVIEW. So it's a fun place for all of us LabVIEW junkies to go learn more and share ideas.
Well, Nancy, it was a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you for sharing some of your valuable wisdom here, and hopefully we can talk again in the future on some other topics.
Great. Thank you, Michael. And thank you so much for your additions to the content. I appreciate it.
And thank you all for listening to this episode. Also, I wanted to mention that there will not be any new episodes of EI Shots for the rest of 2013. We'll be back in January with new episodes and new guests. So stay tuned. Until next year, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and have a great new year.